Welcome to the Quantum Connection Podcast. We are your hosts, Vanessa and Heather.
Join us as we explore the new quantum health paradigm.
Learn how to reconnect with nature to regain your health and to mitigate the impact of modern living.
As quantum health coaches and classical homeopaths, our mission is to inspire and motivate you on your healing journey.
This is for educational purposes only.
Let's dive into today's show. Welcome back, everyone, to the Quantum Connection Podcast. I'm your host, Heather Crimson, with my co-host, Vanessa Baldwin. And we have a return guest who is phenomenal today for an encore interview with Dr. Stephanie Seneff. She did an episode with Vanessa and me a while back on the dangers of glyphosate and deuterium. So just a quick intro, Dr. Stephanie Seneff, she's a senior research scientist at MIT. She's been affiliated with them for over 50 years, which is amazing. And she has multiple degrees with MIT, from MIT. She's a senior research scientist, which is their highest ranking position. And she has been for over a decade now, basically doing lots of research and synthesis of research on nutrition, environmental toxicants, and human disease. So we are absolutely thrilled to have her back and her generosity with her time to talk to us today about vaccines. So just starting off right there, we can't air this on YouTube, which I think is ridiculous, right? Mm-hmm. So that nixes YouTube. And if we can't be trusted to make our own decisions about health and be trusted to be sovereign beings and you know, understand information and make our own choices, and they have to censor things, like, I think that's a huge red flag. So I'm just going to start us off with that. And we might want to ask you, Dr. Seneff, about your basic, idea about vaccines in general, because you've had a long journey in researching them. And then, as you mentioned before we started, that initially you thought, well, you know, polio and those early ones, that they were good. And now you've had a change of heart, right? Change of mind.
That's true. Yes. And in fact, I have to admit that I have four sons and all of them were fully vaccinated according to the vaccines that were required at that time. Luckily, my youngest son basically got his last vaccine shortly before 1986, when they instituted that law that protected the industry from damage. And I was actually very concerned at that time. His last vaccine, I had a friend who had a son who got a DPT shot. And and I read the book, you know, what's her name? The advocate mother who wrote the book, DPT, A Shot in the Dark. And I read that book, and my friend, he got the DPT, her son got his first DPT shot, and he had a high fever, he had piercing cry after the shot. A week later, he had seizures. He eventually developed a severe autism. And that planted a seed in my mind. I was like, I don't know, this is really bad. And so when my son was due for his booster right around that time, shortly thereafter, I said, no, I said, I don't want him to get that booster. And it was interesting what my doctor said. He said, well, that's no problem, of course. He said, in fact, I think these shots are going to be banned. They're going to be taken off the market because the industry is having trouble dealing with all the lawsuits. Mm-hmm. And that was right before, it was like 1984. In 1986, it was gone. And then my kids didn't have to get any more vaccines. So I didn't really wake up about the vaccines until after 1986. And my kids had all been fully vaccinated. So I wasn't against them when I was a young mother. I would be now. I would probably homeschool my kids if I had young kids now. And it would be a huge disruption of my life, you know. Mm-hmm. But that's the situation we're in now. So I'm very, I've been following the vaccines for a long time, and I did papers on the vaccines linking them to autism. Very difficult to get those papers published, but I did get some published and related to aluminum in vaccines. In fact, I think they played a trick. There was all this talk about mercury, and of course, RFK Jr. was big on that, the whole idea of mercury in the vaccines causing toxicity, which I think is certainly true. I mean, mercury is very toxic. And they said, oh, well, ethyl mercury, that's fine. That's what's in the vaccine. The industry is saying that. The ethyl mercury goes to the brain, you know, it disappears from the blood, goes to the brain. So it's not fine. And so so I did a study on the VAERS database, Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, many years ago, and looking at the vaccines correlating with autism. I'm a computer scientist. I did a lot of statistical correlations. And it was interesting because I came up with MMR. MMR is being connected to autism in the VAERS database statistically. And at the time, I was surprised. Ironically, I didn't know you know, about the work on MMR that had been done by Andrew Wakefield so many years ago. And I discovered that work once I saw the MMR, and I said, oh, well, that's weird, because it doesn't have the aluminum, it doesn't have the mercury. Why would it be so toxic? You know, I was confused. And so then I wrote a paper around MMR. And I think at the time we were saying possibly the aspirin that they're the Tylenol that they would take to handle the vaccine could be causal in autism. We were proposing that as a possibility. We were struggling with it, but MMR connected. It turns out MMR actually has tested among the vaccines the highest levels by far of glyphosate in the MMR vaccine.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
So it makes me think MMR's connection may relate to glyphosate. If you get a shot that has aluminum in it, and you get an MMR shot at the same time, which they often do, right? They pack these shots together in the same visit. You've got aluminum, you've got glyphosate, and those two, they hook up, and they go. And glyphosate carries aluminum to the brain, and can cause really serious damage to the brain from the aluminum. And so I switched over to aluminum, and I noticed in the virus database that as the so they said, oh yeah, we got rid of the mercury, this autism is still going up, you know. So of course it wasn't the mercury, but actually what they did was they introduced aluminum at the same time that they got rid of the mercury. So they hid the consequences by virtue of having it go up because of the aluminum. At least that's the story I came up with. And so, you know, DPT shot has aluminum, and the one that they get at birth, hepatitis B has aluminum. And there was a study on hepatitis B, boys that got it versus didn't, and saw a very strong signal for autism. So I think the signal is there. You know, they write these fancy papers with all these very fancy analyses that hide the data. And you know, there was one that came out of Europe. I read that paper carefully, and I saw flaws in it, because they throw away the data for the kids that are most susceptible.
Yeah.
And then they lose the signal. And then they do this really fancy kind of computation that hides the signal. They know how to be clever about hiding the signal, I think.
And the signal means what exactly, Dr. Senna?
Well, you look at correlations between this and that. Well, there's that whole story about the black boys, right? That was part of that movie on Andy Wakefield and the Vaxxed movie, right? Mm-hmm. And they took away the black boys and hid the evidence. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
So you can hide the evidence by clever manipulation. They had some kind of requirement. They added some kind of requirement that was able to throw out a lot of the black boys because they didn't have some kind of birth. I forget what it was, you know, some kind of documentation that allowed them to get rid of the black boys, which then made it the signal disappear. Because it's really, you know, not every child. Some children are robust enough. They don't get it doesn't hurt them really, or that you don't notice anything. It probably does hurt them, but in subtle ways.
Mm-hmm.
But the glyphosate, I think the glyphosate is synergistically toxic with the vaccines. And that is something I wrote about also in the paper, aluminum and glyphosate synergistically working to deliver aluminum and glyphosate to the brain. They bind together and make this a small molecule that's not charged, a small uncharged molecule, which easily gets across the gut barrier.
What's the molecule called?
Pardon? Oh, it's aluminum glyphosate. It's got two glyphosate molecules attached to aluminum, because aluminum has a +3 charge.
Mm-hmm.
And then glyphosate tends to be negatively charged, -1, -2. So when you put the two glyphosates and the aluminum together, you get a zero charge molecule, which then becomes much easier to get across barriers. And you can take it past the gut, past the brain, and then damage the brain. So I think that was all theoretical, but I believe it, you know, and people have said the same thing about other toxic metals that glyphosate can escort them, for example, to the kidneys, mm-hmm. to cause kidney failure. And that's something that's being seen in the agricultural workers. It was arsenic that they were looking at, and they proposed that glyphosate was escorting the arsenic to the kidneys and then damaging the kidneys. Once you get into an acidic environment, then they drop apart. And then both of them become really toxic once they're separated.
Mm-hmm. So it's not just the lighting, for example, affecting the children, or the diet, the crappy diet. Then you have all these toxins floating around in their brain and bodies and gut. And of course, like I think the constraints of the educational system, like you have to sit down and, you know, it's just unhealthy all the way around. And then you have these toxins making them hyperactive. I mean, what a horrible situation. And I'm curious, I know this is a little side note here, but what would it be about the black boys that would make them more of a I forget the word you use. The
Yeah, they were more susceptible. They didn't know why, but I suspect it has to do with excess glyphosate exposure and poor food quality. So they have nutritional deficiencies. It's those kinds of things,
Makes
nutritional
sense.
deficiencies and toxic exposures, that set a kid up for damage from the vaccine.
Yeah, makes sense. I want to go back because you mentioned a few things about that the how the schedules increased, and also about the law that protects the people who make the vaccines, so you can't actually sue them, because people may not know that information, that there is laws that,
Yes.
you can't even you can you have no rights basically if your child is vaccine injured and your child does get autism or your child gets SIDS or sudden infant death syndrome, right, or something happens. You can't even sue them. You can't do anything. They
That's
have
so
laws to protect
frustrating.
them. So do you,
Yeah,
what
and there's supposed to be this vaccine court that's handled by the government, and that, they'll give you compensation, and that doesn't work at all. They absolutely refuse to acknowledge that the vaccines could possibly cause autism, because they know that the vaccines are dead in the water if they do, right? They know they
Right.
have to protect that message, and they've gone fiercely overboard to make sure we don't know that vaccines could possibly cause autism.
Yeah. And then also the increase in the schedule happened. You said your kids got in before, right? That happened. That was like in 1989. So that was,
Yeah,
right.
I thought it was 86 when they first passed that law, or was it just introduced? I don't know. You say 89. Okay, I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, you probably
Somewhere
might
in the late
remember.
1980s. Yeah, I'm not sure, but yeah, my youngest got his last of the series. We had many fewer vaccines in those days. It was much, much easier to get through the program. It's horrifying now when a kid shows up and gets five or six vaccines at one time. It seems like that's just, how can you possibly think that could be okay?
Such an assault to the whole immune system. It's so suppressive to the immune system, and
I
it's just
know.
so much that the body can't handle it. And I want people to understand that vaccines actually have toxins in them. That, that's the point. What you're saying is there's actually toxins in them. And like you said, we thought it was the mercury, which honestly can't be good either. But
No.
the aluminum in them is also the main issue. And I never heard that about the glyphosate. That is so interesting.
Yeah,
That's
in fact, I can tell you there were two people who tested for, I suggested it to Zen Honeycutt. And Anthony Samsel independently suspected it. He and I collaborated on a number of papers. He's a toxicologist, really interesting person. He's measured glyphosate in lots of interesting places, like horses' hooves and breast cancer cells. He finds it in these kinds of tissues, and he found it in. So he and Zen Honeycutt, who's the founder of Moms Across America, she's great. She's been measuring glyphosate in lots of things, and so she looked. She and Anthony looked at the same time. They did several different vaccines. Had them tested, and it's consistently in both cases, it was the live virus vaccines that were contaminated with glyphosate. The ones that had an aluminum in them were not, which is interesting. So the aluminum didn't come in the package with the glyphosate, but you could have the two shots, and they could certainly join hands, if you had both shots at the same time. But they both found much higher levels in MMR than in any other vaccine. But there were other live virus, like the flu shot, the rabies shot. They also had glyphosate, but lesser amounts than the MMR.
So it's not just glyphosate that one's carrying in their bodies. You're saying they actually add glyphosate to the vaccine.
They don't intentionally add it. It just
How
comes
did they
about
get
because
there?
they feed them. The live viruses have to be fed, and they feed them nutrients that are contaminated with glyphosate.
Oh,
They're
wow.
not
Now that
intentionally
makes
doing it.
sense. Yes.
Yeah, I
But
suspect they might have quietly fixed that without telling anybody, but I don't know.
do they, because they have to put like food in them too, right? Like sometimes
Well,
there's
there's
like
food.
egg whites, like, because
That's
I've
how you
heard.
get those allergic reactions to these
Right,
foods, because they're
exactly.
injected past the barriers. I mean, that
Yes.
is just crazy. Anything you inject in the body past all the barriers, I mean, that's really scary. That's one thing about the mercury in the vaccines. When you eat something that has mercury in it, if you've got a healthy gut, that mercury is not going to get by, not going to get past the barrier. If your gut's leaky, then it is. And of course, glyphosate causes leaky gut. So you're going to be more susceptible to mercury in your food if you're getting chronically exposed to glyphosate. But normally they don't get in. The barriers are good. But then when you inject it, no barriers, right? It's right straight into the tissues. And then it's going to get into the lymph system, and go to the brain. And it's just bad news. So you injecting is really, really dangerous. In fact, I've seen studies on glyphosate being injected versus ingested versus injected, and injected is much, much worse.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. A lot of people might not know that. Like, that there's egg whites and peanuts and things like that. This is why those,
Yes.
that's why those allergies are so common. And in fact, one of the things that happened to me personally after having the COVID vaccination, and then I got really sick after it. And my health took a total, plummet. But I couldn't eat egg whites anymore. And
That's
now,
really interesting.
yeah, it
Wow,
was,
that's
yeah. So
amazing.
yeah, I
Well,
could
that
not
was
eat.
something that I also discovered back. I can remember the day when I was in my office and I was just, cruising the web looking for things. I had this idea that food contamination and vaccines might be causing food allergies because I was seeing all these at that time. This was many years ago, like in probably 2007, something like that. And food contamination in the vaccines causing food allergies. And I was rummaging around the web and I found this web page. It was written by, I think, a mother of a child who had been injured, probably who had, food allergies. And this mother had done systematically all the vaccines and she was able, and all the food allergies, and she'd lined them up and she'd been able to find at least one vaccine that had every single substance that was a common food allergy. All of them were
Crazy.
present in the vaccines. And I remember I got up from my chair and I went out into the hallway and I started pacing the halls. I was like so upset when I saw that. I was like, I can't take this, This was 2007, so I'm still at it now, but I am just like so frustrated with the situation we're in. And especially where the government is just like, oh yeah, everything's fine. Oh yeah, we're just diagnosing it more. I mean, it's just like the, hello. It's like, what is the matter
Yeah.
with these people that they can't see what's happening right in front of their eyes?
I, Dr. Seneff, I mean, I don't know if it's that they cannot see it or they don't want to see it because they make a lot of money from vaccines.
Yeah, I
So
know. And
that's
from
why.
autism, I mean, people who treat autism get paid, their job is to treat autistic kids. They don't want kids not to have autism. I mean, maybe they do, but it's hard to separate yourself from your wallet in order to, because these things get fixed.
Yep, 100%. And it's so clear too when you look at populations that don't have autism, like the Amish, who don't vaccine. They don't have vaccines, and the kids don't have autism there. I mean, I'm
Yeah,
sure
it's
there are other factors. They don't probably have as much glyphosate either because they're not using those on their farms, and they're not exposing them to Wi-Fi and artificial light and a lot of other probably suppressive medications, right? But
They're probably not eating nearly as many processed foods.
no. So there are other factors that makes them stronger and more robust, basically, especially in the lineage. But they don't have vaccines, so that is a huge
Yeah,
thing.
I
So
know.
it might be a reason why we don't have autism in those populations, and that's a great study.
Right. And there have been papers that have been published that show tremendously improved health for the kids who are unvaccinated.
Right. Well, because isn't there's information that shows that if you had childhood epidemics, right, you're actually going to be stronger. You have a stronger immune system, right? So if you got
Yeah,
those
it's interesting because the vaccine does in fact produce, usually it causes you to produce antibodies that will in fact sound the alarm as soon as it sees that and try to grab those few viruses and get them under control before they, so there is something that it does that's positive in terms of protecting you from disease. But I argue that antibodies in the body is a last resort. When you have a healthy immune system, your body doesn't bother to produce antibodies because it sort of knows it doesn't need them. It's only when it gets out of control that they, oh gosh, we've got to take this, step two. So it's like if the innate immune system is strong, it can just brush off the virus. You don't even get sick, or you have a very mild case. But if the innate immune system is not strong, then your body goes into this more specific approach that gets certain immune cells to memorize that particular virus. So that's going to be their job to take care of that virus. The body only does that in an emergency situation. If your immune system is healthy, you don't need the antibodies. And the antibodies can backfire because they can cause autoimmune disease. So the virus is forcing you to, the vaccine is forcing you to take this second step, even if you have a healthy immune system, because of the way it's rigged. You end up, because it bypasses certain critical steps that are supposed to take place when you actually catch the disease. And so when those steps are missed, then the immune system misinterprets it as, oh, this is broken. We got to put in these antibodies. And that's the way the vaccines are designed for that, to force you to make antibodies. Antibodies is not a good solution.
No.
Yeah, it sounds like it's creating problems where there were none for people
Yeah.
who are healthy enough. So at this point in your research, Dr. Seneff, do you think is there any what's the word I'm looking for? Reliable, trustworthy data, but also just in your opinion, do you think we even need any vaccines? Because I'm kind of in the position where I don't really feel like it's necessary.
Yeah, when I was, as I got more and more information about the vaccines, these things that were going on, I still had in my mind, oh yeah, smallpox, polio, those were good. Those are the ones I got, those are good. But these new ones, no. And then eventually I said, and I read, Let's see. I'm losing the name of it. Suzanne Humphrey's book,
Yeah, I
which
have
was
that one.
say what was it?
I
Oh,
have it, but I don't remember the name of
Dissolving Illusions. Thank you, brain. My brain sometimes it's
it.
like, I
Brain
know
is
what's
doing
going
well.
on.
You're doing
Dissolving
great.
Illusions.
Yeah.
Suzanne Humphrey, great book. I read that very carefully, and it was at a perfect time for me because that was when I was struggling with trying to figure all this out, and that was when she went into great depth about polio. And smallpox, they were not a straightforward story, neither one of them. And polio was a complete, it was fake, really, because it was the DDT that was causing the polio, was causing the symptoms that they were associating with the virus. And once the DDT, and the DDT went down at the same time as the vaccine was introduced, and actually the polio was no longer a problem once there was no DDT. But then they gave the vaccine all the credit and made everybody think, oh, wow, this is so fantastic. And therefore, vaccines are great. So they used a lot of messaging around that, but it was a false story. So now I don't think the idea of vaccination is a sound idea. That's the way I would say it. I think it's a bad idea. And of course, they're making a ton of money off of it. They're making us sick because of it. And then they make more money selling us drugs to try to treat our various diseases. So for pharma, it's a great idea, especially because they get off the hook on any kind of damage that ha happens. It's a dream job. It's a dream outcome for them, right? Because they don't have any kind of liability.
That's awful. I mean, you create the problem and then you create the solution. That's kind of how I see that. And that reminds me, the other day, I forget where it was, somewhere online. Oh, now we have this new drug for, mRNA-induced heart issues or something like that. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is lunacy. Like,
I
how does
know the same company that's making the poison is also making the
Wow.
treatment. I know
Oh.
it's so absurd. It really is. You sort of can't believe that the world isn't waking up faster. I mean,
Right,
people
like how do we
waking
not
up.
see that, right? They create the problem and then they create the solution and they just make all the money and we just like keep taking the Kool-Aid. I'm like,
I know. I know. I
yeah.
really hope people will eventually, enough people will wake up. A tipping
You
point is something
have
that
to have a
Jefferson
tipping
talks
point.
about, the tipping point. And I think
Yeah.
we're getting close to it, actually. I think the COVID vaccine has done us a favor in terms of getting many, many more people aware and starting to question all the vaccines, not just the COVID vaccine.
Yeah, I never would have questioned them until now, until I got sick from one. I was like everybody else. I thought it was a good idea. Like people, when they come after me about vaccines, I'm like, I used to think vaccines were good. I gave all my kids the vaccines. I wish I didn't. I didn't know. I didn't know better. I didn't, I would never have think that anybody was trying to harm me. I didn't think about these things at all. But then when it happens to you or somebody you love, all of a sudden you're like, oh shit. This is actually really bad for me. And then you start learning all the other things about glyphosate and artificial light and Wi-Fi. You learn all these things, and you start connecting the dots.
And
And
then
it's
you get
awful.
really depressed, because how do I go forward with this? I just keep fighting. I can't not fight. I can't not fight it,
Yes. Yeah,
It's
we
just
have
like you
to.
have to speak up and hope
Yes.
that enough people wake up and change, and that things change. And it's going to change bottom up from grassroots, from the people who got injured, I think. Those are the ones who are really, I love the mothers of the autistic kids. They're so powerful. And so it's sad that they have to go through that and have their child injured so badly. But
Yeah, it happens all the time in my practice as a homeopath. A mother called me this morning. Her child was vaccine injured, and it's just like it comes up so much. And her child has autism, and it's so sad. But yeah, I mean, we just have to keep spreading the word and keep doing podcasts like this and keep, getting the message out there so more and more people will get interested and learn and then they take a stand and then hopefully we can make a difference. That's the idea, right? So, yeah. So, let's talk about the COVID vaccine and why it's different.
Oh
So,
gosh, yes, it's
yeah.
quite a topic. It's been an interesting story for me because I mean I was completely wrapped up in glyphosate, as you know, for many, many years, and I should hold up this book, Toxic Legacy.
Yes,
Such a
everybody
great book.
get this book, Toxic Legacy, that Dr. Steneff wrote and read that.
So I had finished that book really right before COVID got hit, and so it was kind of good timing for something else. And then I immediately got worried when I saw Warp Speed. Trump was talking about we're going to get this vaccine out in Warp Speed, and I knew, and that's why I started reading about the mRNA technology even before the vaccine was released, like in November of 2019, 2020, I guess it was, because it was 2021 that it got released, right? Yeah, so November of 2020, I started reading the papers going back to the 1990s about the development of the mRNA technology. And I became very concerned right away. Before the vaccine even got released, I started worrying about what was going to happen with that vaccine, and realizing that there were so many hoops they had to jump through. They basically have been developing that technology for over 20 years, and they had some snags along the way. And then they solved the problems by putting in some toxic stuff. So they basically kept changing the formula of the vaccine in order to. And their goal was to make the so they have to make this messenger RNA. And they know that messenger RNA is very fragile. If you just put that messenger RNA into the body, there are enzymes that would just tear it apart right away. So they knew they had to protect it. So they said, we got to put it inside these lipid particles, right? So mm-hmm. then they started thinking, oh, if we put in these cationic lipids into the membrane, and then that will help to protect the RNA from it'll be inside that lipid membrane. It won't be able to get attacked by those enzymes. And furthermore, it'll look like an LDL particle, look like a normal lipid particle. So all the cells can take it up, you know, all the cells know how to take up LDL. That's a very important lipid particle that delivers important nutrients to them that are fat soluble, hiding inside that lipid particle. And then these synthetic cationic lipids, they experimented with a lot of different ones. They came up with these ones that worked really well. They're very interesting because they get in through the lysosome, and as the lysosome acidifies, they cut loose. They basically are able to release the RNA into the cytoplasm before it makes it into the lysosome, where it's going to be completely digested. So they learned how to protect it from getting attacked by in the digestive system of the cell, allowing it to get loose and start making protein, and keeping it again safe from being broken down. And then the other thing they did, which was actually, I think it was practically a Nobel Prize winning idea, was to modify the RNA by replacing all of the uridines with methyl pseudouridine, all of them. And methyl pseudouridine is a sort of analog of uridine. You could say it can go into the DNA or RNA into the RNA instead of uridine.
And what is uridine?
It's one of the four nucleotides. So you have, you know, the famous DNA code with the four mm-hmm. nucleotides done three ways. So you have three nucleotides in a row. Like, for example, GGG codes for glycine. Okay. So G is guanine. So you have these four nucleotides that make up the DNA and make up the RNA. Just four, you know, it's like a four-letter code. It's really cool, actually. That's the basis of biology, mm-hmm. the DNA code. And they code for proteins. And there's like 20 amino acids. And each amino acid has unique signatures of sequences that code for that amino acid. Then you make the protein from amino acids and you assemble it along following the code. So the RNA that's in the vaccine has this abnormal situation where all the uridines are methyl pseudouridine. And they discovered that when they do that, it stumps the enzymes that break it down. So the enzymes don't know how to break it down because of that methyl pseudo part attached to the uridine. And the RNA sticks around for a really long time. So that was their goal. That it's going to get broken down before it makes protein. They won't get any antibodies. It won't work. That was what they were obsessing on.
So this is why it sticks in the body for so long and people can't get rid of it and can't detox it, right?
Yeah, and you keep on finding longer and longer times that it's still sticking around, which is shocking because it's supposed to last a few hours. Normally, RNA lasts for a few hours. The body makes RNA from DNA, it makes protein from RNA, RNA disappears in a few hours. Mm-hmm. And they've seen this messenger RNA still around several weeks later. And I think it's getting longer and longer that they're still finding it hanging around, you know, long after the vaccine was delivered. And it can continue to make protein all that while. It's also been humanized. They've stuck onto the ends of it human versions of the things that go on the ends of RNA. So RNAs typically have things on the left, you know, things at the beginning and things at the end that control, that regulate it. And they put in there regulators that are normally used for hemoglobin, which is the protein in the red blood cells. The red blood cells don't have a nucleus. They ditch their nucleus early in life, and then they wander around in the cell without a nucleus, so they can't make any more proteins. So mm-hmm. they rely on the hemoglobin that they make. The RNA for the hemoglobin keeps making hemoglobin throughout the lifespan of the red blood cell, like 3 months. It can still make hemoglobin. So how does it do that? Because the RNA is not getting destroyed. Why is it not getting destroyed? Because it has these special things on the ends that say, leave me alone. Don't break me down. So they say, well, that's great. Let's just put the hemoglobin ends onto the RNA for the vaccine. And then that'll also stick around for a long time. So they were all, you know, they were obsessed on the idea of keeping it from getting broken down because they were sure it was going to get broken down. It wouldn't work. And they succeeded miraculously well, you know, so well that it's causing a lot of trouble because it keeps on making spike protein for so long.
Right.
It can be broken down. And it's spike protein is extremely toxic. So, you know, and of course, also the human cell is making this spike protein. So the immune system is extremely confused because it sees these muscle cells in the arm making this weird protein that isn't human. They recognize that it's not a human protein. The immune cells. So they basically think this cell is doing something really toxic. I need to get rid of it, right? So the immune system will attack the cell and kill it, the cell that's making that protein, especially if that cell is an endothelial cell lining the blood vessels, which it can be because the particles get out. So there's a whole part of it that has to do with exosomes that I'm really fascinated with. And you know, where does it go? And so originally they said, oh yeah, it stays in the arm. You've heard that. Everything stays in the arm.
Right.
And that's not true. They know it's not true because they've traced it, you know, and I even knew studies before the vaccine was produced on other mRNA vaccines that they tracked it in rats. They actually gave them, they've had a way to actually find out where was it going, you know, and they found it in the spleen. They found it in the liver. They found it in the ovaries. You know, it was going into all these organs.
Mm-mm. So the body just stays in this hyperactive immune response, and which is what we see. Like that's, it's so crazy to me because that's kind of like what happened to me. It was like a mast cell activation syndrome reaction, which is like the body just is in this, the immune system is just fighting everything like all the time, like hyperactive to everything. And that's exactly what it was. So it's just, it's so bad. Oh.
Yeah. And I have to say that, I got really interested in exactly where does it go? You know, like I wanted to have the whole story. It goes into the arm and then the immune cells get attracted because the muscle cells are crying for help. Like, oh my God, I've got this toxic. I don't know what to do with it. You know, putting it up out on their membrane. That attracts the immune cells to come to the muscle. And of course, the muscle, you can get sore muscle and that sort of thing. And then the immune cells, they're not immune to taking up the vaccine because they can also take up, they would not take up the virus because they don't have that H2 receptor. But they can take up the vaccine perfectly fine because it's a nanoparticle. It looks like an LDL particle. They take it up. Now they get infected, transfected with the vaccine. And now they're making spike protein. And so they're probably like, oh my God, what do I do now? I picture them as little, you know, animated creatures. but they're, so they end up, you know, they get right into the lymph nodes and you start, people have swollen lymph nodes under their arm, which is a characteristic symptom of breast cancer. So people go and try to see if they have breast cancer, and it's actually the vaccine. And I think the vaccine probably increases your risk of breast cancer, but I don't know.
Is this
where
the turbo cancer comes into play?
Yeah, well, I think so. I'm very interested in turbo cancer and exactly how that happens. And I have we actually have a paper that there's a team of four people. I'm one of them. We have a paper that we've been trying to get published, and it's been a very rough ride. So it's still, it's not published, I should say, because nobody wants to publish it, but it's a very deep analysis into exactly how the vaccines could cause autoimmune disease and cancer. And it's very interesting science. I read so many papers on the immune system. You can't believe last summer, I was just immersed in the immune system trying to figure this out. And I think we got somewhere pretty far because we realized that these immune cells that come into the muscle, they get transfected with the vaccine, they go into the lymph system, and then they, from there, they can carry it to the spleen and to the thymus. The really important thing to me was the thymus. I kind of centered on that because the thymus, it's very interesting when immune cells get activated. Some percentage of those activated immune cells go to the thymus. This is well known. They go to the thymus. And in the thymus, they're basically communicating with the cells in the thymus to instruct them about, hey, we've got this situation here. Again, I'm thinking of these animated creatures, but we've got this situation here where there's this strange protein that's being made, you know, in the, all throughout the body. And here it is, and please do something about it. And so, but what happens is that the epithelial cells in the thymus, they have the H2 receptor. The vaccine is being exposed. Vaccine spike protein is being exposed on the surface of the immune cells because they're making it, and then there's this furin cleavage site, which is looks like something that was man made, but that chops off the S1 piece, and releases it, and the S1 piece binds to the H2 receptor, and the epithelial cells have H2 receptor. They express a lot of it in the thymus, so they get infected with that spike protein, which is very toxic, and it kills them. So when the epithelial cells in the thymus get killed, that's something that people know about that's going to cause what's called accelerated thymic involution. And thymic involution is a is what happens as you age. And the faster the thymus involutes, if that's a word, the faster you age. And so it's basically aging the immune system by destroying the thymic epithelial cells. And that's what we propose in that paper. It's happening. And I believe that's happening. And so that anybody who's getting multiple boosters, every time they get a booster, their immune system ages some more, their thymic involution, thymus shrinks more. And, you know, basically, if you can keep your thymus strong, as long as you can keep your thymus strong, you're going to have a healthier immune system, because that's where the immune cells emerge. That's where new ones come in and they decide what to be. Mm-hmm. And so they get a whole different program because it's because of this damage that's happening to the thymus. So I think that may be a critical piece of the puzzle, which then makes you susceptible to autoimmune disease and cancer, because that's what happens when your immune system ages.
So the thymus is being compromised. Basically, mm-hmm. it can't perform its function mm-hmm. optimally. And no one wants to publish your paper because that would, you know, basically expose this information and expose their how it's making people ill, this mRNA mm-hmm. vaccine. And so what are you going to do, Dr. Seneff? I mean, this is like critically important information. It is something people should know about, but then you get, I don't know the right word.
Blackballed. Might be the word. I mean, it's really major censorship. It is yes. really quite amazing to me, the degree yes. of censorship that is going on right now. And the way they protect the people from the knowledge is just to not let the papers get published. And that works extremely well, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's so frustrating. It must be so frustrating for you as a researcher who has all this knowledge and you want to share it with the world and you want to help people. And like, man, that's frustrating.
But of course, we're sharing it, at least to the
I'm so glad that you're here and we are so grateful and thankful that you came to share this, and our listeners will be way more informed and, you know, have this knowledge to spread to others. And
yeah,
it's just so frustrating though, but it makes so much sense. You know, we need that thymus gland to work really well. And I wonder if that's true of just this vaccine or other vaccines also damage the thymus. Like, I wonder.
Well, I think it's a unique feature of this vaccine because of what I just said, all the different things that are totally different from normal vaccines, very, very different approach to the problem and really consequences they should have thought of. I mean, that knowledge is there because I read all those papers and the papers talk about the thymus and how all these things can happen. It's not like people didn't know. They should have been able to predict that it would not be a good idea to produce an RNA molecule that can't be broken down, that it can't be turned off, and just let it keep on spewing out a toxic protein and then let it get distributed all over the body. And I think the distribution pathways are also very interesting. And that's something I was wondering about. It goes around very well and gets distributed throughout the body via exosomes, is what I believe. And exosomes are these lipid particles that cells release. Exosomes are a communication system for the cells, and they use them a lot. And when muscle cells get stressed, they release more exosomes, and they can put into those exosomes all kinds of interesting things, including signaling molecules, things called siRNAs, RNAs that are short RNA molecules that are able to modify protein expression in the cell that gets infected, or that picks up that exosome. So the exosomes are the muscle cell is experiencing this crazy thing it's never seen before. And then I think it's releasing exosomes into the synapse with the motor neuron that's controlling muscle movement. So the motor neuron has this long axon that goes from the spinal cord. The motor neuron is sitting inside the spinal cord. It's quite fascinating. Mm-hmm. And it has this long axon that goes all the way down to the arm here. In fact, you know, all the way down to the legs and everything. There's long, long axons that hook up from the spinal cord to the skeletal muscles to make them contract. And so at that synapse between the axon, which has come down from the spinal cord, and the muscle that's sitting inside the arm muscle, exosomes are released into there that have spike protein in them and also have mRNA to make spike protein inside them. This has been shown. In fact, again, there's been papers that have shown that the mRNA in this technology, not this particular mRNA vaccine, but another one, they showed that the entire RNA sequence can end up inside the exosome. So these exosomes, then they get taken up by the axon at the synapse, and then they're actually actively transported by these molecular motors. They're actively transported up to the neuron's base, which is in the spinal cord. And so the neuron receives these exosomes containing this RNA that makes this toxic spike protein. And then they're going to also release exosomes and transmit them up the spinal cord, up to the brain center. And then the neurons in the brain centers pick up spike protein and spike messenger RNA. This is theoretical, but I think it's happening. And then they start making spike protein as well. And then you can damage those brain centers that control things like breathing, coma. You can go into a coma, you know, consciousness, your heart, rhythm of your heart can get screwed up. I mean, all these horrible things can happen. And of course, they can also go to the heart. Those exosomes can make it to the heart along nerve fibers. So exosomes travel inside nerve fibers. That's what's so amazing, inside. And they get actively transported. So it feels to me like that may be one of the most important pathways by which this vaccine gets distributed throughout the body along. So you can go into the lymph system, you can get lots of places from the lymph system, you go into the blood circulation, you get everywhere from there, but you can also travel along nerve fibers. And what I think is very interesting is these people who are very strong, have very strong muscles, like wrestlers, you know, basketball players, these people, there have been a lot of reports of these people, you know, wrestling champion getting clobbered by the mRNA vaccine. And I think that's not an accident. I think it's because they have much stronger connectivity between their neurons in their spinal cord and their arm muscles that are so strong, you know, there's like really strong connections because they have to send a lot of signals to get them to move. So they have a much more powerful pathway by which to travel, for the exosomes to travel back up to the spinal cord, back up to the brain centers. So they're much more vulnerable to the kinds of problems that we're seeing, you know, with arrhythmias and cardiac arrest and all these things, I think are a consequence of these really, really strong pathways that allow the vaccine to get transported up to the brain.
Well, and there's so many deaths. I mean, I don't know how much, I don't pay any attention to mainstream much of anything. So I don't, you know, the news and whatnot, but so I'll see it on social media, the people I follow, which whatever people want to think about that, but you know, people, athletes dropping dead and you're like, well, does it make any sense? But even though you're saying it's theoretical, that makes so much sense that if they have great connectivity and they have great musculature or whatever, and their nervous system, I mean, it's like these things are just going all over the place. Whereas
it just makes it much more effective for that transport system to work well, because it's so well developed. Huh. Because they need to have a strong connectivity in order to make those muscles contract. You know,
science horror movie is how I see this. You know,
yeah, it's really incredible. It's just it's I don't know. And then another thing they do, which is, you know, there's so many things they did to alter the RNA, and there's another one that people don't really know much about, which is this code optimization. It's called. So I told you already has all those methyl pseudouridines in there, which keeps it from getting broken down.
When you say pseudo, it's not S-U-D-O, it's P-S-E-U-D-O, right?
Yeah, P-S-E-U-D-O, pseudo, yeah. False, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So codon optimization is quite interesting because it involves changing each amino acid has several codes that code for it. For example, glycine is GGX, where X can be any of the four. So there's four different codes for glycine, GGA, GGC, you know, GGG, and GGT or GGU in the case of the RNA. T gets into U, a little techie detail there. But so each amino acid has four codes, but they actually know that some codes work better than others. They're more efficient to make it faster. And so what they did was they swapped out the codes that the virus used for the protein, and they put in new codes that are the optimal code. To make it really work fast and hard, you know, push out lots of RNA and lots of protein quickly. They changed all the codes. So the actual sequence that's in the vaccine RNA is completely different. It has a lot of changes from the sequence that's in the virus RNA. And they also actually altered the sequence, and they put two proline codons, two protein proline residues, two proline residues side by side at a critical spot in the vaccine version, which actually prevents it from folding up and getting in. So it ends up sticking around on the H2 receptors and causing trouble. So it does a better job of suppressing the H2 receptors by virtue of having that modification. And so that was intentional as well. So they made all these changes in the interest of making sure that it would encourage the immune cells to produce antibodies. And it worked extremely well in doing that, but at what cost? You know, that's at what cost.
That's the big thing. what costs. It's been a huge, I mean, it's just, I mean, you have to be able to see all the things that have happened, all the vaccine injuries, all, like you said, the athletes that are dropping dead. That's like, here you think you're doing something good for your health by being an athlete, right? And then,
Yeah, it's dangerous to be an athlete
I
if you're
mean,
going to
like
get a COVID
that's,
vaccine.
I mean, yeah, so
Yeah.
it's rough.
Dr. Zenif, what keeps you positive? What keeps you going? How do you sort of temper or mitigate the immensity of the, you know, the enormity of this, the research you're doing? I mean, the implications of it. You're actually seeing the very, you know, reasons that things are happening at the micro level. So how do you manage all that? Because you're so cheerful and
Yeah,
probably,
it's
I
I
think
certainly
Hawaii might have something to do with it.
Hawaii might have something to do with it. I live in a very beautiful place and I have a very lovely life actually. Low stress aside from this problem, which is a lot of stress. I think, you know, there's two things really. I love the science. I love it. And I love to read papers on biology. I'm trying to figure out cancer. I mean, I'm really engaged in the science and I feel very excited about what I'm learning. And we talked about deuterium last time. Deuterium is really, really special, and I'm pushing out my message on deuterium as much as I can. And
You have a
so,
book coming out about that, no?
well, in theory, right now I'm too busy with other things between all these podcast interviews and trying to get these papers published and doing the research. I'm quite busy, and I love, as I said, I love the research. I love a puzzle, and biology is like a wonderful puzzle. So, I'm so happy I find a good paper. I print it out. I go out. I sit outside and read my paper, and I'm just so
Cool.
happy. So,
Sounds
I
nice.
think I'm kind of in my little, you know, nerdy world where I'm trying to figure these things out. And I would like to write a paper on deuterium. I mean, a book on deuterium. I certainly have enough material to do that. And I'm still trying to get papers published. And that is, of course, a big chore because you have to be patient. You basically, you know, the situation is that many journals kick it back without review. So then you try another one, kick it back without review,
What
and
does
finally
that mean?
get.
They don't even read it or what? They just
They
curse.
decide that they don't want to go there, and so they just say, "I'm sorry, it's not appropriate for our journal." They find some reason why it's not appropriate.
Sounds more, you know, like a good excuse.
Well, and that's actually better than when they accept it for review and they sit on it for months, and then they finally come back and say, "Well, I couldn't find any reviewers,
Oh.
so sorry, but I'm going to give it back to you. We can't publish it. We don't
That
have
means you can't
anybody
donate
who's."
anything, you can't submit anything
Nobody's
at
willing to
all.
review it. Nobody's willing to review it. So we have everybody in the whole system is like, no, this can't be published. I don't know. I mean, it's really frustrating. So talking to people like you is actually awesome because I was able to express a lot of stuff that I know to you guys, and you're receptive, you know. And so I do a lot of podcast interviews, and I also do presentations. And of course, having the opportunity to do them on a webinar instead of having to go someplace and spend a lot of money flying. You know,
Yeah.
so webinars are fantastic, and then podcast interviews. So I keep myself very busy. I'm certainly driven to get the message out, whatever way I can, basically. And thank God for, you know, the alternative web that allows you to post this particular
Yeah.
interview.
Yeah, no, we really appreciate that. And that's so great that you're spreading the message and doing all this. It's amazing. Now, in your research, have you found anything to help with spike protein? Like help with, you know,
Yeah.
that's what people want to know that, I'm sure, right?
I
Like, what do we
know.
do about this? Because say I didn't know, like my case, and I got
Yeah.
this and I did it, and now what? Like, you know, so like what do you do? Like, I mean, obviously everything that Heather and I, you know, the lifestyle, living the right lifestyle is going to help your body be stronger and more resilient, but you know, what can people do?
Yeah,
Anything
and in
you
fact, there are a lot of doctors who are trying to find out how to treat, right? And how to treat long COVID, which is kind of the same thing as vaccine injury, I think. Those are kind
Oh,
of
yeah.
two peas in a pod. And
Yeah.
I know people who are practitioners who are trying to figure out how to help people with this. And people have talked about taking certain enzymes. Peter McCullough has protocols, right? I know someone who has been heavily involved in the development of a product called Vedicinals, 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 specifically for long COVID and vaccine injury.
Okay.
And that's got a lot of interesting Ayurvedic medicine, basically. It's Indian medicine, Indian Ayurvedic medicine, various herbs. And there's a product actually in China, you know, China and Taiwan, they have all the Oriental medicines. So I think the Indian medicines, all the herbal medicines are very interesting to me, and I think they can help. And in fact, my husband is Chinese, and he had access to a product that was made in Taiwan as a treatment for COVID. When if you catch COVID, take this. And in fact, even to take it in advance to be ready to deal with COVID more efficiently. And he was taking that it's a tea, and he was taking that tea regularly before we both caught COVID at the same time. And I had a much worse case than he did. I mean, neither one of us had a bad case. I was really miserable on the first day, but then after that, I was pretty much okay. And he never even had symptoms, but he tested positive. So we got through COVID without any issues, and neither of us had any kind of long lasting problems afterwards. But we took that. I took it as well while I had COVID. We'd taken it on a trip with us. We caught it when we were in Boston, and we were prepared. And we also had ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, so we were like throwing the kitchen sink at it. But it
Well
totally, yeah, it totally worked. So we, yeah, we were taking vitamin C. We did all the things. So those are the things that you take for. If you know the people who promote these kinds of natural treatments, zinc and vitamin C and herbal medicine and ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. And to me, that would be what I would take and what I did take when I had COVID. And I think it could also help with long COVID as well. I would guess the same thing, sort of, you know.
But Dr. Sinnott, there's no way to actually purge your body of these mRNA substances, is there?
Well, of course, improve your immune system. And so these things will improve your immune system, and you need to have a strong immune system in order to combat it. And you can, if your immune system is strong enough, it can break down the spike protein, because there's a problem with, if you have, and a lot of people have issues with the digestive system of their cells. You know, in fact, autistic kids have this problem of not having healthy lysosomes. And if the immune cells don't have healthy lysosomes, they can't remove toxic exposures. They can't break them down. So it's critical to improve the health of your immune system, which of course is the opposite of what the vaccine does. So if you're taking all those vaccines, you know, you're kind of at the rope's end, because you don't have an immune system that's working anymore. And that's another thing that's been shown actually experimentally, because they've been papers have been showing that this IgG4, have you heard of IgG4? That becomes it's an odd immunoglobulin. Those are the antibodies. So you have IgG antibodies are highly produced by the vaccine. And most of them are good at stopping the infection. But IgG4 is a weird antibody that actually gets in the way of the other antibodies and doesn't work. So it's blocking the other antibodies from protecting you and goes the opposite of protection. It says, oh, let this guy thrive. We're not going to fight him. You know, it says, hold off. It's like sort of saying, hold off. Don't attack this virus, because, and I think that's partly because after you get lots of, so they were looking at the IgG4. After the second shot, it starts to go up the whole time between the second shot and the booster. And then once you get the booster, it goes up even more. It's becoming the dominant antibody that you're producing, which is the opposite of protecting you. So then you just aren't even protected from the spike protein. And of course, also the antibodies that are produced wear down. They disappear very quickly. After just a few months, you're back to zero, and you're worse than zero because you've wrecked your immune system along the way.
Right. So now you no longer have the antibodies and your immune system is so depleted and wrecked. And now you're even in a worse position, actually.
Yeah. So I think a lot of people are, they've had five or six shots and they're like, I think that's enough already. So people are cutting way back. It's good to see that very few people are taking up the latest booster that they're offering with some kind of modified, you know, formulation that's supposed to be more specific for the new virus. People are getting very wary of it, I think.
I hope so because I don't ever want it to be mandated,
Oh,
That's
I know. I'm so terrified of that.
me
And I
too.
managed to get out of it at MIT, which was really nice. They granted me a religious exemption, which
Oh,
was
good.
very
That's
happy about
great.
that.
Good. Good. Because I
Yeah.
wonder, Dr. Sen, if that poses a bit of a conundrum for you with your in
I
there, right? It's like, uh-oh.
know. I thought I was going to have to quit my job, actually. I was so relieved when they gave me that exemption. So thank you, MIT. And MIT was also, I was very angry with them for requiring it, of course, but they were also one of the first universities to get rid of the requirement for the kids. So I was really happy about that also.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, it's just these vaccines are just so dangerous for the immune system. I think all of them are dangerous for the immune system personally, and they all suppress the immune system greatly. And Yeah, we need to have childhood epidemics. We need to bring that back and actually
Yes,
help
that's actually,
society stronger if
it's
we
true.
bring.
In fact, I found papers that talked about how when kids, when people got mumps and measles and chickenpox as kids, which I did, that many, many years later as adults, they actually were protected from things like cancer. It was really fascinating.
Right, they won't get chronic disease later on in life, right? So when the more we suppress and shove the immune system down and make it not work appropriately, we're just causing chronic disease. So it's
Yeah,
like
and you
we're
see all
doing
that with
opposite.
measles too, shingles and measles, right? That's another nightmare
Right. Yes.
because now the kids are not getting it anymore. And actually, when you get the measles as a child, I had the measles. It was nothing. I had a few spots on my stomach. It was nothing. It was fun actually. My siblings and I all got it at the same time. We're playing Monopoly at home, instead of going to school. Had a great time. But when you catch the measles as a child, then you have the antibodies. And then as other people, as you grow older, children are catching the measles and then you're getting exposed and it's sort of boosting, it's keeping your antibodies going because they're getting repeated exposures. But now nobody gets measles anymore. And now you've got these kids, adults who get shingles, which is so much worse than measles. And even getting measles as an adult, which is happening, the college kids are getting measles. It's much worse than if they got it when they were 10 years old, So it's all mixed up now. We've just totally messed up the system so that we have much worse outcomes. Measles was a trivial disease when I was a kid. I remember actually in fourth grade, I remember the teacher said, "So how many of you have not had measles yet?" And I raised my hand. There were like two others, because it was sweeping through our town, and I knew I was going to get it. And they said, "Well, you really need to catch it. You better catch it because if you get
Better
it
off.
later," they were telling us to make sure to try to catch the measles
That's
because
so
if you don't
funny.
catch it this time, next time you're going to be older and it's going to be worse. So you need to get it.
Right. Right. We used to try to get the chicken pox from my brother, right? The brother had the chicken. Oh, I want it too, to get it over with. Like that's what it used to be like, right? And now we're
Yeah,
like,
they were really, the whole society was geared towards catch it now while it's coming through because it was something would come through every few years, and when you're in fourth grade, you need to get it because you haven't had it yet. And it's getting older and you're going to get sicker if you get it next time. So
wow, how
now
have
I'm
things
thinking I did.
opposite now, right?
Yeah,
Like
I
think of
got
how
it.
we reacted to COVID. Everything was block everything, mask
Yeah.
everything, clean everything. It was just a
That's
total,
so crazy.
and
Yeah.
it just it didn't work. It
And now we're in much better shape because so many people have caught COVID. And so they have natural immunity. And so it doesn't spread as easily anymore. When you get a new virus introduced into the world, it's going to be a rough ride at the beginning. But eventually, people are going to have antibodies and everything will sort of, and they will have had exposure, which is protection. Even without antibodies, it's still protection with the exposure. So we need to recognize that nature knows best, I think.
Yes, I think that's the
That's
key.
the message right there.
Right. Trusting our bodies and fortifying ourselves naturally and trying to harmonize with our environment versus having this adversarial, position where we have
Right.
to take these extreme measures.
Yeah, no, viruses do something interesting for the host. I believe so. In fact, I believe that about all infections that and all the microbes that live in our gut, right? They're so beneficial. And they've got a very complex system that they've figured out to keep the host happy. And they want to do that because the host gives them a fine place to live. I think the gut microbes are amazing. And we need to nurture them. We really need to pay attention to them and keep them healthy. And of course, we've probably talked about that the last time with the glyphosate because it's messing up the gut microbes. And that's causing a lot of trouble for our health.
We need to live symbiotically with them, right?
Yes, exactly.
That's the whole key right there.
Yeah.
It's been amazing, Dr. Seneff. We really appreciate you coming on and spreading this message and taking the time out of your very busy schedule to come on the podcast and just give us all this great information. And I think the message here is that, vaccines are dangerous and we do need to be aware and people need to know this and we need to spread this message and that we need to learn to strengthen our immune system through exposure to nature and sunlight and, earthing and all the things. And Heather and I are
Healthy
both
food, healthy
healthy
food.
foods, no glyphosate, real whole foods, right? Clean water without glyphosate and any other toxins, right? Vaccines are a toxin. We need to keep these things out of our body, right? And that, I mean, Heather and I are both classical homeopaths as well, and that can help strengthen the immune system, right? There are other natural medicines that you can use to strengthen the immune system. So we need to like push our focus to those things instead of, these things that are really dangerous to our body.
Totally agree.
Thank you
So.
so much, Dr. Sen. If any parting words or anything you want, any like, where do you want people to find you or any?
You did that. Yeah, stephaniesenef.net is my webpage. And of course, my book, Toxic Legacy. I worked really hard on that book, and I'm proud
it's an
of
awesome
it.
Book.
Yeah. And and just, stay healthy. I think the message is really stay away from chemicals is a big one. And
yeah,
get lots
100%.
of sunlight, get lots of sunlight exposure, and eat
Yes,
healthy food, whole foods, organic foods.
that's
And
why
I
you're
think
staying
if,
so healthy, because you're in Hawaii.
yeah, I know Hawaii is awesome for that. So I really appreciate living here. Move to Hawaii, that'd be a good thing to do. So,
All right. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Senef.
Thank
yes,
you.
thank you, thank you.
Thanks so much for joining today's show. For more information about Heather and her offerings, see her Instagram at Heather Crimson or go to her website at enlightenedmood.com. And for more information about Vanessa's offerings, visit her Instagram at bright_light_wellness and her website at brightlightwellnesscoach.com. See you next week.